Caution, cigarette smoking may be hazardous to your health. That was 1966, and that message was introduced on packages of cigarettes. Today, nearly 50 years later, we read, Surgeon General's warning, smoking causes lung cancer, heart disease, emphysema, and may complicate pregnancy. Good evening. Welcome to Health Matters on Red River Radio. I'm Dr. Randy Brewer, and for the next hour, we will be discussing smoking cessation and tobacco-related illnesses. Our guests tonight include Dr. Sanford Katz, Dr. Himanshu Desai, and Jared Mitchell. Dr. Katz is a radiation oncologist with the Willis-Knighton Cancer Center. Dr. Desai is a partner with Pulmonary and Critical Care Specialist in Shreveport, and Mr. Mitchell coordinates Willis-Knighton's Cardiac Rehabilitation Program. As always, we welcome your calls and invite you to participate in this discussion. Please call 1-800-552-8502 with your questions. Dr. Katz, smoking causes lung cancer and a number of other cancers as well.
Yes, it does. Certainly, lung cancer is the most widely discussed and gets probably the most attention, but we see quite a number of cancers that are related to smoking that people may not even realize are attributed to this habit. I treat a lot of head and neck cancer, and the majority of those cancers are the tongue, the throat, the voice box. Those are generally smoking related as well. We see cancers of the esophagus and stomach, the pancreas, the cervix. That's something people may find surprising. Cervical cancer is actually increasingly seen in smokers. Bladder cancer, kidney cancers, even leukemias. So it's not just lung cancer anymore.
Dr. Desai, I understand that stopping smoking today will delay the onset of COPD.
That's true. The minute you stop smoking cigarettes, you start healing your lungs. The benefits of quitting smoking occur almost immediately from stopping smoking. COPD, of course, stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder. It's a chronic disease of the lung that occurs over a long period of time. The number one risk factor for COPD is smoking. It is also caused by other factors, but cigarette smoking is the number one factor that we deal with.
You know, Jared, in addition to cancer and lung disease, smoking causes heart disease. It sounds like there are some pretty good reasons to quit smoking.
Oh, definitely. That's why my field's cardiac rehab and definitely heart-related issues. And that's why I'm passionate about helping people stop smoking if that's what they want to do, because it affects heart health so much. I mean, it's with the chemicals involved with smoking and the aspects of it affecting the whole cardiovascular system, it just wreaks havoc on your vessels throughout your whole body, and especially those vessels in the heart. So if you want to definitely reduce your risk for heart disease, stopping smoking is one of the best things you do. And especially, I mean, smoking on top of family history of heart disease, boy, that's just like throwing gasoline on the fire. And so that's something that's very paramount if you want to reduce your risk for heart disease.
Sounds like it's very important. Again, 1-800-552-8502. We invite you to call and participate in this discussion. You know, it sounds like breaking free from nicotine dependence is not the only reason to quit smoking. It contains a deadly mix of 7,000 chemicals, I understand. At least 70 cause cancer. You know, among current smokers, 69% report that they want to quit smoking. Most of these have tried to stop several times. What would you recommend as the first step in a new quitter?
Well, first thing is to, admit that it's going to be a hard thing. It is definitely not an easy thing. It's not an easy task. There's a lot of different methods out there, a lot of different helps over the counter, and medications to help out on stopping smoking. But the first and foremost thing is that determination. You got to be ready and willing to do it yourself. And these are the other things that can help out, including counseling. What we do, that will help out, get you over that cliff. But you just got to be ready to say, I'm going to go through some rough times, but I'm ready. I need to do this. I need to do this for myself. I need to do this for my family. I need to do this for others. And there's so many benefits. You're not losing something. You're really gaining so many things when you stop smoking.
You mentioned counseling. I understand public education is important as well.
Definitely so. There's so many statistics that show that people, the more they are aware of things, the more they know things about smoking, that they tend to not smoke as much. And so that's the point of a week from today is the Great American Smoke Out. That's just a time to where we create awareness, and boy, a key thing is giving people confidence. And the Great American Smoke Out is a day where you just kind of take a pledge and say, hey, I'm just going to stop smoking for this one day. And boy, if people do that and they accomplish that, they get confidence. And along the way, they learn a few tricks and learn a few tips on how to beat certain urges. And so that day is coming up here in about a week. And then also there's many tools online that provide education in regards to smoking.
If someone in the listening audience wants to learn more about education programs here in Shreveport, what information can you give them?
Well, I can give you what we offer here at Willis-Knighton. And our number at Willis-Knighton to contact for the WK Quit program is 212-4450. We also, again, next week at noon at Willis-Knighton North, Willis-Knighton Bossier, and Willis-Knighton Pyrmont will offer a time where we have smoking cessation counselors giving a pep talk and giving lots of information in regards to stopping smoking. And so our program, that's what we do. We give help people get confidence and give them information that they need and that they desire to help them stop smoking. So that number, again, reach out to us anytime. We're more than happy to help you out in any which way. 212-4450.
And we want you to reach out to us right now. The number is 800-552-8502. We have a question from a listener. Jared, what is all the hubbub about e-cigs? Do they really help?
Well, again, I'm not going to promote heavily on any particular aid. That's something, a trial and error thing for people to try different things that may help them out. The e-cig, boy, I tell you, my concern is that it just creates some awkwardness. You got different places that ban cigarettes, and if you come and do that, then you know, it just creates an awkwardness thing. And if I would say, if you choose just to do that, then maybe do it in your privacy, so it don't create that awkwardness. It still has the nicotine factor in it. And so that's another thing that you gotta eventually wean yourself off of anyway.
Dr. Desai, just within the past week, the British Parliament decided not to label inhaled nicotine in the form of an e-cig as a medicinal product. What do you see in terms of nicotine and its health-related risk outside of the 7,000 chemicals in cigarette smoke that are harmful?
Well, nicotine is the very addictive portion of cigarettes. That's what causes people to be highly addicted to the cigarettes. There's nicotine receptors in your body that get used to having that smoke and that nicotine throughout your bloodstream. The benefits of the e-cigs and any type of nicotine replacement is that it helps mask that without getting the other carcinogens that you've talked about in your cigarettes. Another benefit, I think, of the e-cigs that people subconsciously don't realize is part of smoking, and Jared could probably talk about this too, is behavioral modification, behavioral changes. It's not just cigarettes it's not just the nicotine addiction, but it's the addiction to, I wake up in the morning and I start my day with a cigarette, or I finish my meal and I finish my meal with a cigarette. Well, those e-cigs could change that modification where you're not actually inhaling those other carcinogens. You're using that as your behavioral change, and that could be a benefit. As you know, and everyone on this panel knows, that these e-cigs are fairly new. So the long-term benefits and of these type of quitting techniques has not been studied, and we just don't have enough data on that yet.
Absolutely. At the beginning of the show, we heard what the label was in 1966. I think we have a caller with a question. What are the thoughts about pasteurized Swedish smokeless tobacco? Dr. Desai?
That's very interesting. This is another type of, I believe, method to help try to quit smoking. I have not had much familiarity with this type of product.
I believe it's called Snoot.
Snoot. This is not to be smoked, or this is to be placed inside your mouth somehow, presumably.
I believe it's smokeless tobacco. That's okay. Right.
Well, I will tell you that there really is no safe form of tobacco. And while we are talking primarily about smoking, I can tell you that tobacco in all its various forms poses great risks, particularly in the oral cavity for cancers. And I've seen just horrendous cancers result from use of smokeless tobacco, snuff, chew, what have you. This is particularly a problem in athletes. It's promoted particularly in the baseball community, where a number of players, you know, they're athletic, they're virile, and they chew tobacco, and it's a big problem amongst high school students and college students and middle age, primarily men, obviously. But the dangers associated with smokeless tobacco should not be minimized, because the cancers that can be develop are some of the most disfiguring, horrific cancers you could imagine. And so it occurs in a very vulnerable group, the young. We generally think of cancers as a disease of older people, but it's the younger people that are getting these oral cavity cancers. So I don't recommend non-smoking tobacco products in any form.
And we definitely know that the earlier you start tobacco, whether it's smokeless or smoking cigarettes, the more likely you are to become a daily smoker and then obviously addicted to the nicotine. Jared, how can someone quit using smokeless tobacco?
That they are using smokeless tobacco currently?
Right, chewing tobacco, snuff.
It's going to be kind of the same. You still got the habit, the nicotine dependency on that. I guess one of the main ways you would need to do is you're constantly you're used to having something in your mouth, and the thing would be to do is replace it with something, and that could be the nicotine gum. You would just park it on the side of your mouth just like you would the tobacco. But that's the thing. You just got to try different things that mimic some of the things that you have practiced over and over again. And if there's a certain time where you use tobacco, like a certain time of day or a certain activity, then that would be something you try to dissociate yourself with, and again, use something substitute for that.
I think one thing that I tell my patients when they're trying to start quit smoking is use the letters in the word start. That's a good way of setting up a plan. S stands for set a quit date. T stands for tell your friends and family so you have support from them. A stands for anticipate the problems that you're going to have, the withdrawal symptoms that you're going to have, and come up with a plan to solve those. R says remove all your cigarettes and tobacco products from your surroundings. And the T is tell your doctor and get help from your doctor. And I think that's a good way to come up with a plan to start to quit smoking.
You mentioned withdrawal. What are those symptoms and how long does that last?
Nicotine withdrawal syndrome is actually a true thing. Once you stop quitting smoking, you can start having symptoms of nicotine withdrawal. They can range from restlessness, overeating, even depression at times. They peak usually. They can occur in the first 72 hours. After 72 hours of quitting smoking, your body is no longer addicted to the nicotine, and the rest is psychological. But you can have those symptoms that can persist up to 4 weeks afterwards.
Jared, we hear a lot of patients who complain that they gain weight after they've quit smoking. Is that part of the educational program?
Oh, yeah. That's a big concern. A lot of people, that's one of the main questions we get. And I just encourage people, it doesn't matter if I give them the statistic, you have to gain 90 pounds of weight to equal the health effects of smoking. That's a fact. That don't help them out any. They don't want to gain the 5 to 6 pounds or something like that. So We just try to provide them with some healthy options, eating options, as far as, again, having things to replace in their mouth and having things in their hand. But, gosh, I just try to motivate them. Let's just knock out one thing at a time. If you happen to gain a few pounds, that's all right. We'll fine-tune that later.
Again, we welcome your calls. Please join our discussion at 1-800-552-8502. This is Health Matters on Red River Radio. We have three panelists tonight. Dr. Sanford Katz, a radiation oncologist with the Willis-Knighton Cancer Center. Dr. Himanshu Desai, a partner with pulmonary and critical care specialist in Shreveport. And Mr. Jared Mitchell, who coordinates the Willis-Knighton Cardiac Rehabilitation Program. Dr. Katz, you mentioned a number of cancers, and we've been talking a lot about nicotine replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any evidence that nicotine in and of itself is carcinogenic?
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. I think that certainly the effects of nicotine in terms of cardiovascular disease is pretty well described. There have been some suggestions that it might have a role to play in itself, aside from just the carcinogens, as well as some effects in terms of developing some neurologic cancers and things of that sort. But I'm not clear that there's any definitive evidence that that nicotine in the form of cigarette smoking causes cancer by itself. Getting back on the topic of smoking cessation, I just want to comment. I encounter this a lot with my patients, and it's vital that they stop smoking. I'm always impressed at how successful patients are at quitting smoking once they get to my office. They've already been given the diagnosis of a malignancy in most cases, and they're, quote, scared straight. So they've stopped. You know, I think it's definitely a hard thing to do. It's one of the hardest things that people do is quit smoking. But, you know, the motivation is key, as some of the other panels have mentioned. And certainly once you're awakened with the reality that, hey, you know, I've got a smoking-related cancer, then you know, you're motivated to stop.
We have a call. Molly from Shreveport, what's your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a friend who likes to smoke clove cigarettes, and I had never really heard of them, and it's just one of those things I haven't gotten a chance to Google yet, but he thinks that they're perfectly healthy and not doing any damage, and certainly not near the damage that regular cigarettes would do him. Is that true?
Another smoking substitute, Dr. Desai.
That's not true at all, Molly. Your friend is misled on that whole situation. Those clove cigarettes, they have carcinogens in them just as other cigarettes do. And some of those clove cigarettes aren't even regulated by the government, so that they can be even worse. And in fact, some of those are most of them are unfiltered too, so they can be even worse for your body than just regular cigarettes.
I'm surprised that they're not regulated. If it's something that people are purchasing and smoking, does that surprise you that there isn't a regulation for that?
Most of them are. Some are not, because they can. There's such a wide variety of them that they can just buy the tobacco and make your own clove cigarettes.
Wow. Well, you settled a bet, and that's unfortunate. I'm sorry to have to deliver that news to my friend, but I do think it's important. I mean, because kids are hearing about these things, and we certainly need them to know that they're actually worse for us than regular cigarettes. Thank you so much.
You know, recently I was in Europe, and these hookah cafes are all over the place, and I believe they're starting to appear here in the United States. I guess along those same lines, is hookah smoking any safer than smoking regular tobacco?
Along the same lines, absolutely not. It's tobacco products have carcinogens in them, have adverse effects of cigarette smoking in them as well. Not just carcinogen effects, but you know, cardiovascular that was mentioned above, pulmonary problems, as well as other problems associated with cigarette smoking.
Smoking from the hookah, though, is much more social because you get to sit around with a group of other people. But at the same time, you get the benefit of the secondhand smoke from your friends in addition to the smoke that you're getting from yourself. So I think that that sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah, and instead of you know, stepping outside and having your cigarette that may take 5 minutes, you're hanging out at the hookah cafe for probably several minutes or hours and continuing that, you know, carcinogen and nicotine intake the entire time.
It's also socially acceptable. It's something to go do with a group of people. Whereas, you know, one of the best things that's happened is, I think, socially, smoking has become unacceptable, which is which is great. I think if something is unhealthy for you and people are trying to avoid secondhand smoke and you have to go outside into the cold to smoke, I think it's going to make it harder, for people to continue to smoke. These hookah cafes actually make it more desirable and more attractive. So I think those places should be regulated as well.
We have a question from a caller again. What are the effects of smoking with a person that has diabetes? Dr. Desai?
Nicotine and smoking has been shown to actually increase the risk of diabetes. That coupled with cigarette smoke, diabetes, and that effect on cardiovascular problems, that could be a ticking time bomb on a person that has diabetes. Nicotine is thought to have decreased the insulin sensitivity in the body, so therefore you can make your diabetes much worse. I think if a person that has diabetes, pre-existing condition, and smoke, like I mentioned before, that's a deadly combination.
Well, absolutely, it compounds the effects of the other problems. Dr. Katz, you mentioned scared straight. In a smoker, is there any role for cancer surveillance? You mentioned a number of cancers that are potentially or definitely caused by smoking.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, I generally tell my patients that even though they've gotten one cancer, it certainly doesn't protect them from getting another one. And in fact, the risk of second malignancies, that is another smoking-related malignancies, that are actually pretty high. It's about 5 to 10% per year in people who survive their first cancer. So part of the routine follow-up for my patients is that they get annual screening for other cancers, particularly other cancers of the air digestive tract.
You know, what we learn, I suppose, in medicine is that stopping smoking sort of levels your risk of lung cancer. So you climb the ladder and then you stop climbing the ladder if you stop smoking. Are there any data about these other cancers? Do you arrest the risk of acquiring these cancers as well if you stop smoking today?
Well, I think there's three groups of people, maybe four. There's the never smoker, there's the continued smoker, and then there's the former smoker. And I think there's a group of the intermittent smoker. And so depending on how many years have gone by since you stopped smoking, you lower your risk to one of those other levels. And so even people, unfortunately, who've smoked and quit 20, 30 years prior are still at risk of developing smoking-related cancers, and their risk is still higher than compared to people who never smoked.
Have there been any studies where looking at surveillance for certain cancers, let's just say, for example, Dr. Desai, a yearly chest X-ray, is that worth a patient's money and time to look at that in terms of a surveillance mechanism?
Currently, there's no proven benefit of any type of surveillance for lung cancer. If we can come up with a way to do a screening for lung cancer, we would be in great shape, such as for colon cancer, there's a screening colonoscopy, breast cancer, yearly mammograms, and what have you. There's no proven benefit at this time for any type of screening method for lung cancer. That being said, a couple of things are promising that have been discussed and are being studied. There's a study about low-dose, high-resolution CT scans. Those are just a less dose of radiation and doing CT scans, and they've been having some promise in showing small nodules and keeping an eye on these nodules over a long period of time has been shown to have a little bit of benefit. In my patients, I generally advocate getting a yearly chest X-ray on them. Though it has no proven benefit, it's still, you can maybe catch a nodule early on in its infancy and monitor it and do diagnostic workup as needed.
Again, we're on Health Matters with Red River Radio. Call us with your questions, 1-800-552-8502. Our topic tonight is tobacco-related illnesses and smoking cessation. We have Dr. Sanford Katz, Dr. Himanshu Desai, and Jared Mitchell here to answer your questions. Something that we haven't mentioned so far is secondhand smoke. And secondhand smoke is as common as smoking, from what I understand. Dr. Katz, is there any data that suggests that secondhand smoke is a cause of cancer?
Yeah, it certainly is. The estimates are that it increases your risk of developing lung cancer by about 20 to 30%, just from secondhand smoke exposure, and so living with a smoker or working with a smoker increases your risk of developing lung cancer. So it's not just smoking.
And roughly 50,000 people die each year from secondhand smoke. It's that many and that prevalent.
And that's all causes, cancer, lung disease, yeah, cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. Dr. Desai, does secondhand smoke cause chronic lung disease?
That's a great point that you brought up, and that's absolutely the case. Secondhand smoke can definitely cause chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. More importantly, if you're a parent that smokes and you smoke around your child, that child has 25 times more risk of developing asthma because of your smoking around that child. So that's another good reason to quit smoking. If you don't want to do it for yourself, do it for your child.
And it's important to remind folks, smoking has many adverse reproductive effects as well, such as infertility, preterm delivery, stillbirth, low birth weight, and sudden infant death syndrome. We have a caller, AJ from Minden. What's your question?
Yes, sir. I have tried just about every regimen that's available. Going across the spectrum over the years and pretty much lost hope, even tried the e-cigs. And my doctor has now re-prescribed me to try this Wellbutrin again because I'm kind of more committed now as I've gotten older to saying I've got to stop this. But even when I've gone long periods of time without smoking, stressful events seem to, if I'm given that opportunity and I catch a cigarette from that stressful moment, seems to trigger me just to drop right back to where I was before. How does one stay off of these things once your mindset has traveled away from trying to quit them to trying to just, hey, got to stay away from them forever, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things, not to have them around you. I think we talked a little bit before about having a game plan, and I'm not here saying it's easy, but you got to have something in place to take the what are you going to do for stress relief when those stressful times come. You have to ask yourself, what do non-smokers do? What do they do to relieve their stress? Because everybody has it. Everybody has stressful circumstances. And you got to fill out different things and got to try different things that maybe will help ease that stress. Because that is, you're right, that's one of the most common types of relapses is when people undergo stressful events and they turn to the cigarettes to relieve that stress. But you've gone so far and you've done so great on stopping smoking and gone through a period of time. Boy, I just wish you could enable yourself to have that determination to finish, because you don't want to go through the process of quitting again.
AJ, thanks for your question. Please don't give up hope. We have another caller, Karen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have two adolescent sons, and I'm concerned that at some point they may decide to experiment with smoking. How concerned should I be if they do try tobacco, and what can I do about it, or what should I do about it?
Dr. Katz, wow. Adolescents who start smoking, are they at an increased risk to continue smoking as adults?
Yes.
And obviously increasing their risk for cancer.
Yeah. In fact, unfortunately, for most people, they begin smoking in adolescence, and that's when it starts. I think it's much less common for people to pick up cigarettes later on in life and in their midlife years or older years. So that's exactly when it starts. I think short of locking them in their room indefinitely, I think that you're unfortunately up against the reality of adolescence, that this is a time when, unfortunately, parental influence is not as great as that of their friends. It's cool to smoke, and they feel invincible. And so, you certainly have – it's certainly a challenge. I mean, kids are going to experiment. But I think all you can do is let them know that you're supportive, that how important it is that they not smoke, and then you give them the information. They may experiment.
Jared, would it be appropriate for a parent to bring an adolescent to one of your classes?
To one of my cardiac classes, maybe not as more as effective as maybe a pulmonary. To maybe a smoking cessation class. I'm following you now.
It may not be a bad idea to bring them to see Dr. Desai as well, with his waiting room and folks on oxygen.
That's what I was thinking.
Exactly.
That would make me more effective than even my class. My class would be geared toward people who are actually smoking. I think a dramatic effect of seeing someone on oxygen and having the adverse effects of the COPD already taking effect. That would be it.
Is there any data that increasing the amount of education in the public school system regarding smoking? I remember my health education segment, you know, as part of physical education, was fairly brief in terms of, you know, the health effects of smoking. Are there opportunities for us to intervene in the educational system?
I think the answer to your question is yes. I think that helping educate in the public school system is certainly going to be beneficial to the students, but I think it's important to stress that education starts at home. As a parent, you need to tell your children the adverse effects of cigarette smoke and the long-term effects of cigarette smoke. As Dr. Katz alluded to, and I know these kids at young age feel invincible and think they can do anything, but I think if you keep belaboring the point about how bad it is for you and what a benefit it is for you not to smoke cigarettes, and you don't get them started, I think you can have beneficial long-term effects.
They've actually done some studies looking at states that spend more money on anti-smoking campaigns and education within the public school systems, and it correlates that those states which spend more money have lower rates of smoking amongst teenagers. Now, I don't know if that's a direct effect or if it's perhaps just a correlation that those states where they're willing to put the money, that there's perhaps there's a more educated group of people. They have done studies that the more education one has, the less likely they are to smoke. And that's not specifically education about cigarettes; it's just education. So the more advanced degree that you achieve, the less likely you are to smoke.
Again, we're talking about cigarette smoking cessation and tobacco-related illnesses. We welcome your calls. The number here is 1-800-552-8502. We have three panelists tonight: Dr. Sanford Katz, a radiation oncologist with the Willis-Knighton Cancer Center; Dr. Himanshu Desai, a partner with Pulmonary and Critical Care Specialist; and Jared Mitchell, Willis-Knighton Cardiac Rehabilitation Program Coordinator. You know, collectively, Dr. Katz, states have billions of dollars available to them from tobacco excise taxes and tobacco industry legal settlements for preventing and controlling tobacco abuse. States currently use only a very small percentage of these funds for tobacco control programs. Interesting fact that's available on the CDC website. Dr. Desai, when does chronic pulmonary disease start? Speaking of kids who are smoking.
The minute you start smoking, you start damaging the lining of your lungs. So even with that first cigarette, secondhand smoke, that cigarette smoke is damaging your lungs. Most people don't manifest their symptoms of chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder until they're in their late 40s or early 50s. Even at that point, people are usually young and they feel pretty good. They just feel a little bit more short of breath, and they attribute their shortness of breath to, boy, I'm just getting a little bit older. So a lot of times we don't see these patients with severe COPD or moderate COPD until in their 60s or early 70s. But to answer your question, it starts immediately. The damage to your lungs starts immediately, just as the quitting smoking starts the beneficial effects of your lungs almost immediately as well.
You know, Dr. Katz, we did talk about some of the other cancers, cancer of the oral cavity, cancers of the throat, but some organs that are not in direct contact with smoke, the kidneys, the stomach, the bladder, obviously the cervix. Is there any data that supports that these carcinogens or one particular carcinogen causes the cancer in the organs that are not in contact with the smoke?
It's very clear that the metabolites of the some of the carcinogens within the tobacco, you know, it's processed and concentrated in the urogenital system, and that's why we see such high rates of particularly bladder cancer in smokers, but also kidney tumors. So that's a very well known association.
Women who smoke, should they undergo more frequent pap smears?
You know, it's funny. Women are very good about screening for cancers. They want to get more pap smears. They want to get more mammograms. They want to run races and raise money for breast cancer. You go to the supermarket now, you can't buy a yogurt without it having a pink ribbon on it. And so there's a tremendous amount of attention given to breast cancer. But what's ironic is that more women die of lung cancer each year in the United States than die of breast cancer. And early detection is wonderful. I mean, that's really been a great advance. But there's not a lot that you can do to modify your risk of developing breast cancer. I mean, you can, if you're particularly high risk and you have a genetic predisposition, in very select cases, having prophylactic or preventative mastectomies can help. But that's very, very rare that something like that is beneficial. However, smoking is a behavior, is something that you do, and you can modify your risk right away. And so I'm amazed at how often I see women who want to reduce their risk of developing breast cancer, but they smoke, or have patients with breast cancer and they continue to smoke. And that's, that's just a shame.
Does smoking increase the risk for breast cancer?
Yeah, I think it slightly increases the risk, but it's not one of the major risk factors.
In smokeless tobacco users, should they undergo oral cavity exams on a frequent basis?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, in the community, I know LSU offers a oral cancer screening clinic every year, and there are precancerous signs that are evident in the mouth of people who use smokeless tobacco. And if they're going, I mean, the dentist is actually one of the places that most of these are picked up by their dentist. People go in for routine dental work and they find these things on their tongue. But and that just speaks to how important an oral exam is every year. But again, these preventable cancers really should just be, should be something that we don't see very often. It's just something that you should just try to modify your behavior to risk, reduce your risk for developing them in the first place.
Dr. Desai, we have another listener question. How does one increase lung capacity after they quit smoking?
There are several medications out there that can help you increase lung capacity. You should, before starting any type of medication, of course, seek counsel from your doctor, your primary care physician, or your pulmonologist if you have one. But really, there's several ways to increase your lung capacity after quitting smoking. I think Jared's cardiopulmonary rehab program can certainly help and help increase lung capacity. There's something simple tool called incentive spirometer, which is just an exercise for your lung. Most people are familiar with this type of tool after surgery. They get a little box with a little tube and they take a deep breath in and watch the ball go up. You could certainly go buy an incentive spirometer, but I've told many of my patients that a good way to increase lung capacity, go to the dollar store, pick up 100 balloons, blow up one balloon a day. And that'll help.
Sounds good. Again, our number is 1-800-552-8502. This is Health Matters on Red River Radio. Tonight we have three panelists. We have Dr. Sanford Katz, a radiation oncologist with the Willis-Knighton Cancer Center, Dr. Himanshu Desai, a pulmonologist with Pulmonary and Critical Care Specialist in Shreveport, and Jared Mitchell, the program coordinator for the Willis-Knighton Cardiac Rehabilitation Center. Dr. Katz, we talked about cervical cancer and breast cancer in women. It is also known that smoking is associated with lower bone density in postmenopausal women, as well as increased risk for hip fractures in women smokers. Should these women undergo more frequent bone densitometry exams? Dr. Desai?
Yes, we mentioned a lot of the risk, the complications of smoking, such as cardiovascular risk factors, lung cancer, and COPD. But as you're mentioning, there's several other ones. Osteoporosis is a big one and decreases the bone density. Any person that smokes should get yearly osteoporosis screening with their doctor. It also just increases the risk the incidence of hip fractures in women from smoking. So that's another problem. Other things like peptic ulcer disease that hasn't been mentioned so far. Smoking actually increases the risk of peptic ulcer disease, periodontal disease that we've talked about, and operative complications. If you smoke before going to surgery, you're at a higher risk for having operative complications.
We have a caller, Susan from Dallas. Susan, what's your question?
Yes, about the non-tobacco smoking, like the gum. The gum that you can get to chew.
Right, Nicorette gum?
Yes, Nicorette gum.
Jared, what's your experience with Nicorette gum? Does it help people quit smoking?
Well, my husband has tried it a lot, and it has helped him, excuse me, but I'm not so sure. Is he still getting tobacco?
No. He's getting the nicotine, and it's important also to note, on a side note, the nicotine gum's not to be used in conjunction with smoking cigarettes. You'll get both nicotine from both sources, but yeah, I'm for all across the board any method that's going to help a person achieve stopping smoking. Some people the nicotine gum works great. Some people it doesn't help them. Some people the patch works real well because it's just easy and convenient rather than the gum. But yeah, the nicotine can help out. Nicotine gum can help out on the urges from the nicotine. But again, you'll need to slowly wean your way off of that. And hopefully that'll help complete the smoking cessation process.
We have another caller from Bossier City, Michael. What's your question, Michael?
Hey, I tuned in late, and I asked if y'all had talked about the e-cigarettes at all. She said you had. I guess I just wanted you to talk about them a little bit. I was a pack-a-day smoker, and I bought one of these 2 months ago, the kind that I fill with the juice. I haven't had a cigarette since I bought it. I haven't wanted one, had any cravings, right? Just had to have a cigarette. And I started on a certain milligram of nicotine. I've come down off of that some, and I can see where maybe in 3 or 4 months I'll be down to no nicotine and I won't use this thing at all.
Great job.
I mean, are there health risks that you guys know about on these things?
I think first and foremost, we should applaud you for quitting smoking cigarettes. That's fantastic. You've done a great job, as Jared pointed out. These e-cigarettes, as we talked about a little bit earlier, have been shown to be very beneficial in the behavioral modification of cigarette smoking. In cigarette smoking, there's really two main components of it: pharmacological modification and behavioral modification. And using these e-cigarettes to hold that cigarette, have that in your mouth, or just walk around with something in your hand, they've been shown to be great with that. The fact that it's helped you, I think that's fantastic. Everyone is individualized, and everyone should do what works best for them.
Michael, congratulations. We wish you the best of luck. From Natchitoches, we have Tim with a question. Question from Tim.
Yes. I started out as a child, years ago, the tobacco wasn't as big the evil as we've come to know it today, and as my body would tell me, as addictive as I thought it would be. I did that for probably a better part of 30 years, and I used the cigarettes as a means to get off the smokeless tobacco because there never was a product or anything out there that I found that helped wean you off the smokeless tobacco, which to me was a whole lot more addictive. So I used the cigarettes as a way to wean myself, kind of jumped out of the pot and into the fire. But after about a year and a half of the smoking, I was able to get on a Genix and help me to quit smoking. But my thought is, why is there not more emphasis put on the smokeless tobacco? And I'll let go and listen to y'all.
Yes, we've talked a little bit about smokeless tobacco, and I believe the levels of nicotine reach a peak much more quickly with smokeless tobacco, and it can be quite addictive as well. And I think you're absolutely right. Jumping from the pot into the fire is an apt analogy. And you're really trading one risk for another. Moving from smokeless tobacco to smoking cigarettes basically is going to increase your risk for lung disease, increase your risk for lung cancer, and then it's going to maintain your risk for gum disease as well as throat and oral cancers. Dr. Desai, more deaths are caused each year by tobacco use than by HIV, illegal drug use, alcohol use, more vehicle injuries, suicides, and murders combined. What is the mortality rate from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease? You mentioned a patient may develop this disease when they're in their, say, early to mid-40s with a 30-year history of smoking. We know that smokers die an average of 10 years earlier than non-smokers. And so what would you say about that?
Well, cigarette smoking is a major cause of all-cause mortality in the United States. Over 400,000 deaths occur each year as a result of cigarette smoking. That's all causes. And 40,000 deaths occur each year from secondhand smoke. So really, we're looking at almost 500,000 people a year are dying from cigarette smoke.
And tobacco-related illnesses.
That's right.
Again, we are on Health Matters with Red River Radio. Our number is 1-800-552-8502, and we welcome your calls to join this discussion. We have three panelists with us tonight. We have Dr. Himanshu Desai, a pulmonologist with Pulmonary and Critical Care Specialist here in Shreveport. We have Dr. Sanford Katz, a radiation oncologist with the Willis-Knighton Cancer Center. And we have Jared Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell is the program coordinator for the Willis-Knighton Cardiac Rehabilitation Program. We know we've talked a little bit about heart disease. We haven't talked a lot about secondhand smoke and heart disease. Jared, we know that secondhand smoke at home or work increases their heart disease risk by 25% or 30%. Do those patients or do these individuals need monitoring for their heart disease if they're, you know, being exposed to secondary smoke? They may not have high blood pressure or diabetes or even have any evidence of heart disease, and they're experiencing secondhand smoke and increasing their risk for heart disease.
Yes, they are increasing their risk. So these people may want to have a more frequent checkup with their doctor, a more regularly scheduled maybe stress test or just a visit with their doctor. It's just important to be aware of. Be aware of that secondhand smoke can increase your risk in addition to all the other risk factors. And then there's also, I tell you, I was thinking about this earlier, third-hand smoke. That's when you smoke somewhere else and you still have the residue on your clothes, and then you hold a baby or something, and the baby can get what they call third-hand smoke.
Very excellent point. So basically it sounds like, you know, a second-hand smoker, if you will, really deserves the same amount of treatment, if you will, or intensity of monitoring and health monitoring as a smoker. We have a question from a listener, Pat from El Dorado. Pat, what's your question?
It's not really a question. You haven't discussed the expense of smoking. I don't know how people afford to smoke. I mean, they're like $5 or more a pack. If they take that money and put it aside, they can have a wonderful time with it. Is there no?
I think that's an excellent point, and I was going to try to mention that at some point tonight. If you just take, they've done studies actually on the cost benefit of quitting smoking. If you look at a yearly cost benefit just of a pack a day smoker, that could be over $2,000 a year in a cost benefit just from the cigarette smoke. They've done other studies also that have coupled the health benefits and the cost of having to see your physician more frequently and adding that into the cost benefit of cigarette smoke, and that number could reach up to $25,000 a year in cost benefit.
You know, from 2000 to 2004, cigarette smoking was estimated to be responsible for $193 billion in annual mm-hmm. health-related economic losses in the United States. Obviously, affordable health care is a very pertinent topic right now. Nearly $96 billion in direct medical costs and an additional $97 billion in lost productivity.
Yes, Dr. Brewer, I think we need to consider also, though, that the tobacco industry spends about almost $10 billion each year, and that's approximately $27 million every day on cigarette advertising and promotion, and roughly 72% of those dollars are spent on discounts to offset the tobacco taxation and other tobacco control policies. So it's really a tug of war with the tobacco companies.
Yeah, there's a lot of money flowing in both directions related to tobacco. We have another question from James in Arkansas. James, what's your question?
Well, I don't really have a question. I just had a comment. That was all right. I quit smoking. And
congratulations. How'd you quit smoking?
How did I quit smoking? Well, I've tried everything.
in the past. I've been smoking, I guess, about 16 years. And I tried the lozenges and the gum and the patch and Chantix. And for this one time recently, I tried the e-cigarette. The only way to quit, you got to read this book. It's Alan Carr's The Easy Way to Stop Smoking. He was a smoker for 33 years, and I mean, unless you're a cigarette smoker yourself, really, it might be hard for most people to understand what's going on in our minds, but he knows what it's like, and he writes his book. It's really easy to read, and there's just no way you can smoke after you read it.
You know, Dr. Katz mentioned earlier when patients are diagnosed with cancer, they're scared straight. James, what convinced you to stop smoking? What changed in your life that made you decide this is something I need to do?
Well, it was just killing me, and it cost a lot of money. I mean, I could feel it every day. I was just slowing down, be more tired after work, smell bad, you know, can't exercise like I used to, and it just cost too much money, you know. So,
well, how you feeling now?
Huh?
How you feeling now?
I feel great. I've quit for over a month, and like, I don't even want to smoke. I don't think about it. I really just want to share this one thing. You know, you smell bad when you're a smoker, and maybe you don't have any cigarettes, so you go to the store first thing in the morning, and someone in the line in front of you, they've already smoked. You're clean. You just got out of the shower. You can smell how bad they smell. Then you go, you buy your cigarette, and then you smell that bad for the rest of the day. You don't know it. But as I'm reading this book, halfway into it, I start to smell myself, right? And I'm just telling you, I believe it's a good way to quit smoking. I just wanted to throw that out there for people who tried everything.
Yeah, that's a great point. And smoking does blunt a lot of senses. Your sense of smell and your sense of your taste will improve so much after you stop smoking. But again, congratulations. We talk a lot of people about that there's a lot of people smoking. But there's so many people, there's millions of people that have stopped smoking, and that proves that it's not an impossible task.
Absolutely. James, thank you so much for calling and telling us your story. 1-800-QUIT-NOW is a free telephone support service that the CDC offers that can help individuals who want to stop smoking. Callers have access to free support and advice from experienced counselors, a personalized quit plan, self-help materials, social support and coping strategies, the latest information about cessation medications, as well as information about over-the-counter nicotine replacement medications for eligible participants. Jared, you had mentioned the Great American Smokeout. Maybe we can mention a little bit more about that again.
Yeah, that's an event held on the third Thursday of November, and it'll be coming up a week from today. And it's another event to create awareness of cigarette smoking, and I think it's just a great confidence builder. It's a challenge for smokers to say, hey, just set them down for one day. Let's quit for one day, and then boy, once that happens, and smokers get that confidence that say, hey, I can do away with them one day, then that may build a little confidence down the road, and where they can quit smoking for good.
Absolutely, one day at a time. AJ from Minden is calling us back. AJ, what's your question?
Yes, sir. I listened to you very carefully about, you know, holding on to your stress levels and stuff. Listen to more of your conversations there. And, of course, the fact is, once you start smoking, you're destroying yourself. And I understand that. And if you can quit at any time, then you're at least back to that level. And as I've listened to blowing up balloons and spirometers and stuff, trying to at least recover a little bit. But there seems to be a lot of promising research about stem cell research in lung tissue in particular, that for us recanted sinners who really regret the fact that we ever picked this habit up in the first place.
AJ, let's ask Dr. Desai, what do you know about stem cells and lung regeneration?
a lot of this stuff is just experimental at this point. They're still doing numerous studies on that. I think the main topic on smoking cessation is, as Jared has pointed out, take it one step at a time, one day at a time. Don't think of it as the rest of your life. Think of it as, I'm going to quit today. I'm going to quit this hour. I'm not going to buy a pack of cigarettes today. And then the next day, take it again. I'm not buying a pack of cigarettes again.
Absolutely. One day at a time, I think, is a really important concept when we're talking about smoking. You know, secondhand smoke, we've talked about, again, these are some techniques that we're using as a culture to eliminate smoking. We're eliminating smoking indoors. It's really the only way to fully protect non-smokers from secondhand smoke exposure. Separating smokers from non-smokers, cleaning the air, opening windows, ventilating buildings, those things, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like a good idea. Open the windows when you're in the house, or cleaning the air, ventilating buildings but still allowing smoking. These actually do not eliminate secondhand smoke exposure. So I think it's important for people to understand that the only way to eliminate your risk from cigarette smoking and tobacco-related illnesses is to not be exposed to smoke at all, whether it's hookah or it's smoking regular cigarettes, smoking cigars, smoking light cigarettes, or being exposed to secondhand smoke. The only way to eliminate your risk or lower your risk for tobacco-related illnesses is stopping smoking today and not being exposed to cigarette smoke in any capacity. One other topic I wanted to cover in terms of the cancer-related risk, we hear about smoking related to smoking pipes as well as cigars. Dr. Katz, are there any health effects from the standpoint of cancer and smoking a pipe, or let's say smoking a cigar on an intermittent basis, not very frequently?
You know, the issues with tobacco exposure comes down to how much you're exposed, the amount of tobacco you're exposed to, and how frequently you're exposed to it. So certainly an infrequent smoker is going to have less risk, at least for cancer, than a more frequent or habitual smoker. The cigars, you know, what makes them considered, I don't want to say safer, but perhaps less risky, is that people who smoke cigars tend to have one cigar, or they may have one cigar on occasion. But then again, there are plenty of people who smoke, you know, cigars multiple times throughout the day. So I think, you know, the important thing to keep in mind that whether you're smoking a pipe or smoking a cigar, there's no safe form of tobacco use.
Thank you very much, Dr. Katz. Tonight, I'd like to thank Dr. Himanshu Desai, pulmonologist with Pulmonary and Critical Care Specialist in Shreveport. I'd like to thank Dr. Sanford Katz, radiation oncologist with the Willis-Knighton Cancer Center, and Mr. Jared Mitchell, the program coordinator for the Willis-Knighton Cardiac Rehabilitation Program. I'd like to remind you that Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, please consult your physician or health professional. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance from Wally Derleth and Daniel Gordy. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. This is Dr. Randy Brewer, and thank you for joining us this evening.